Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their time, their insights, and their expertise enable to us to grow our businesses. My name is Gary Lafferty, the founder and creator of the Authority Accelerators, where we take tech leaders and we drive revenue to their businesses by elevating them from being just a mere expert in their field to being an authority and sought out personality. I couldn't be more excited to have our guest on today. Today we have Tarek. Why don't we just kick off straight away, Tarek? It's great to have you here. Why don't you give us a very brief introduction of who you are and what is it that you actually do?
Sure, Gary. And thank you for having me on your podcast. So as Gary mentioned, I'm Tarek. I am basically based out of India, running an IT company called Texic Solutions and a gaming company called T7 Gaming. And when I'm not basically working on in my office, I love to take my motorbike to the mountains. And the second thing that I love to do is basically eat out with my friends and family. So those two things are something that I do just to relax, basically. So that's a brief.
Well, we all need, as entrepreneurs, we just need that switch off time, don't we? And like you, you know, I spend a lot of times in the mountains as well. We get the, you know, when we go over to Colorado, we spend a lot of time up in there and it's just pure clarity. So I totally understand what you're talking about when you go up into the mountains. So let's dial back a little before we get into, you know, the business and what you're doing to grow your business. Why don't we go back to the beginning? How did you get started in tech and what inspired you to start your company?
Sure. Basically, the tech journey started right after my college. My first company got campus selected, basically, joined my first company, which was basically a tech and a gaming company. So I got a lot of exposure into technology as well as gaming side of things. I really started loving gaming part, but slowly tech side took over. So I was more into process and everything. I've been in this industry for around now 18 years in the tech industry. And then I think it's in the October of 2016, I started my own company, Texic Solutions. And the thing that motivated me was the entrepreneurship. My uncle, who is an entrepreneur, he's based out of US. So looking at him, what he's doing, like creating jobs, creating different opportunities for everyone, that was quite motivating for me to jump on the bandwagon, basically. So I started that. And 2 years later, I started another company called T7 Gaming, which again was mainly into video slots and stuff.
Gotcha. So with regards to the problems that your company solve, every business should solve a problem. What is it the biggest problem that you solve out there in the marketplace?
So basically, one of the things that we are looking at is providing automation services. A lot of companies, be it manufacturing, be it like travel or other industries. What we have seen is a lot of processes as such are not automated, which basically drills down into lot of wastages, basically, as well as impacting the bottom line and the profit margin of those industries. So that is something, being someone from the data analysis part of it, I saw like a lot of things that can be made lean, the process can be made lean via automation. So that's something that we mainly focus on.
Got it. So when it comes to a business, and this is what I love about this particular podcast and having, you know, tech leaders like yourself on, is that everyone listening here, everyone watching this has some form of entrepreneurism on their journey, wherever they are when they're in their business. And we have challenges on a daily basis. That's just what it's like about running a business. I want to dial you back a little bit if I can. What was one of the biggest, earliest challenges you had when you first started your business? And how did you overcome that?
Okay, so when I started back, like in India, one of the greatest thing is having a huge amount of resource pool as such. But again, being a good thing, it also comes as a challenge because then we have a lot of freelancers over here in India. So running a company as against being a freelancer, the main thing that comes is the costing part of it. And being in India, a lot of companies who are looking to us for some work, they look at India as a cheap option, basically. So cost-saving option. So high quality, but lower cost. Now, that was a challenge that we started facing because a lot of customers, they were looking at freelancers as against our company. So the major thing that I focused on initially was having a good team, a team of experts. So that was the first thing that I looked at. And the second point was giving good customer service. So initially, a good team and a good customer service was something that we tried on. it was really hard getting the customers in initially because we were just starting off. Sales was, again, one of the major challenges, one of the pitfalls that I fell into, I would say, initially, because not being from the sales part. But it was a slow and gradual learning process. So we learned that how to get these things done. And over a period of time, when you provide good service to the customer, that is something that helps you to grow, basically. So that's the major point that we worked on.
Right. So that's a really interesting point you made there, Tarek, is that, and again, tech people, we are very good developers, coders, engineers, fantastic at doing the actual tech stuff. But you mentioned something there really important, is that you got to develop the sales skill, because unless you can develop the skill of selling, effectively you are becoming the best kept secret, because you're very good at what you're doing, but no one is actually taking you on as a company because you can't sell that. So what did you do after realizing that you didn't come from a sales background, you needed to have that sales ability? What are the steps you actually took in able to enhance your selling skills?
Okay, so initially when I started out, it was just like any other initial salesperson, bombarding with cold emails, messages, and everything. So that was something that I also started with. But slowly and gradually, I learned that this is something, if we keep on doing this, we are not going to grow, basically. So it was mainly about building relations with the client with whom we have worked, building relations with people with whom we have not worked, but we see that they are someone with whom, if we build relation over a period of time, maybe we are going to get business from them. They will see what we are doing. They will see the benefits that we can provide. The things that we can bring to the table. So that building relation was something that that I learned over a period of time. So initial pitfalls in sales came, but I'm quite fortunate that those were early failures or early pitfalls that I had to face. And then I gradually grew onto them, basically.
Yeah, and I do like what you just said there about, well, there's a couple of things, and I want to dissect that. First and foremost is that it's about building relationships. You know, the relationship, you suddenly realize, rather than going for the short-term win and bombarding with people with messages or sales messages that just didn't work, you decided to go for the long-term understanding that if I can build more relationships, they get to see what we can really do. And that's when perhaps we get better quality clients, and therefore you're not competing with everybody else as a commodity. But I want to dial that back a little bit about the bombardment. The bombardment, like you said, you learned that at an early stage. What do you now, looking back at the way you did that, what do you contribute to why it didn't work?
Okay, so just considering India as a point of sale, basically, you can say. So even in Delhi, where I reside, there are like maybe 10,000 companies. Now, scale it to the entire India and entire different countries, like maybe Philippines, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Bangladesh. These are the companies, these are the countries with whom we are competing. So a single person, like the data, like the target customers, they are the same for each and every one of us. Now, just imagine you are getting maybe 10,000 emails a day. So that is something that is not going to work. It's just going to irritate the person whom we are sending the emails. So instead of that, if we build relationship, if we create a niche sort of a thing, if we have got some references from like word of mouth or from our past clients, if we have got those things, that's something that's going to work, but not this just hitting a person like every now and then.
I think that's a very key point there, isn't it? It's about how do we stand out? We hear tech companies say this all the time. We just can't stand out above all the noise. It's a very, very noisy market out there, you know? And if the point is, if you're trying to do what everyone else is doing, if everyone else is bombarding with emails and you're bombarding with emails, it makes common sense that you're never going to be heard because you sound and look exactly like everybody else. Yet, when you're sending them, you don't realize it. You think, my message is unique and it's going to break through right at the millions of emails they're getting. And it just doesn't work from there. So what other strategies are you using, Tarek, to stand out above the noise? Because obviously you are in a very, very noisy niche where you are. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of, you're almost flooded with experts, aren't you? Your niche is everybody's an expert. Everybody knows what they're doing. You know, so what other things are you using to stand above all the experts out there and claim your fame and get your message across?
Right. So one of the things that I think that anyone in the service industry faces is we don't have a product as such. Being in a service industry, we can't show you what we are going to deliver at the end of the day. Okay, so what works is basically if you can show to that person, okay, I have done same thing for X, Y, Z clients, and these are the people who are happy with my work at the end of the day. That is something that is going to basically catapult you in the market. That's one thing. Second part is with respect to building relationship. We use LinkedIn a lot, so that has helped us grow. And apart from that, going to conferences and meeting people face-to-face. So I think meeting people face-to-face is something that has worked wonders for us, basically. Being on LinkedIn or email or like even video calls and stuff, these are good. But a face-to-face thing gives a very close interaction with the person with whom you're going to work or for whom to whom you're pitching, basically. So conferences, LinkedIn, and building your niche. Again, with LinkedIn, the good part is you can show to the people through articles, posts, and stuff, what are the things you are doing actually. Okay, you can give case studies, you can show customer testimonials and stuff. So those are the things that help basically to stand apart.
Do you know, that's a really good point there you make, Tarek, is about, there's two things. I want to talk about the conferences in a minute. But LinkedIn, you're absolutely right, that you can, it's not just about advertising for clients. It's not just about showing off what you do, but it's also showing, you know, past history, case studies, testimonials, but also showcasing what you do by using white papers and articles and using the what we call the publishing side of the five P's.
That's it, yeah.
Of actually publishing some stuff out there, because if you're publishing and no one else is publishing, I've always said that I'd rather be the person who wrote the book than read the book on the topic. And if you're the one doing the writing, you automatically gain that status as an authority more than an expert, because all the experts have read the book. That's how they become experts, by reading books. But if the authority is the person who wrote it, who wrote the white paper, who actually got that bit out. So, and then publishing it on LinkedIn, which I think is absolutely fantastic. LinkedIn has some great ways of doing articles, white papers, featured products, featured posts, all of those great things are fantastic. For those who are listening on here, take a leaf out of what Tarek has said there and relook at your LinkedIn and say, look, how can I change the dynamic on my LinkedIn profile? How can I start looking like an authority so I can stand out? And one of the best things to do there is publishing. And as I said, thanks very much for bringing that up. Now, conferences, what a great way. Getting back in person post-COVID. Conferences are coming back, but the numbers are dramatically down. You know, there's a lot of conferences coming. How do you choose which conferences to go to? And what is it that you do specifically when you're in a conference?
Okay, so basically with respect to gaming, we have got some fixed conferences, like ICE is there in Barcelona. So that's a conference that we go to, basically. So there, like you said, there are now a lot of conferences post-COVID. Pre-COVID, there were conferences, but I think post-COVID, 2-3 years, the number went almost to zero. And again, we are picking up. Now, with respect to conferences, we try to see, like, we have got a certain niche, basically, in the service industry as well. Even in the tech side, there are multiple categories and multiple services that we can provide. So we have basically shortlisted 2-3 niches, basically, for ourselves, because we cannot do each and everything. Like you said, we cannot be expert in each and everything. We can be jack of all trades, but we cannot be experts, again. So we have to basically select some niches for ourselves as a company. So we have selected those niches, and we look at the conferences where we see, okay, this is where we are going to get the best result. These are the conferences where most of the people from that particular niche are going into. So that helps us a lot in shortlisting the conferences. And then again, there's another point wherein we see like the number of visitors, the number of exhibitors who are there as such, because we also have to see the ROI, basically. A lot of traveling, spending time over there. So the ROI is another thing that we look at, like based on past experiences and based on different reviews and stuff, like what conferences we should get at.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know, the ROI of a conference, it is a marketing expense, it's a business expense to market your company from there. It isn't just going over there and going to a conference. So that's a really good point. So let's dissect that a little bit. What are you doing to ensure, what is your MO, your modus operandi, when you get to a conference, in order to enhance, ensure that you're going to get a good ROI out of it? What is the practice, the sort of the day-to-day things you do there?
Sure. So I think from ROI perspective, it starts much before we attend the conference. It's basically getting the data from the people who are attending, the exhibitors who are there, setting up meetings. Like if you're not well prepared beforehand, before going into the conference, it's basically is waste of time, because each and everyone who is attending the conference have got a set goal. They have got set timelines. It's not like they've got whole day to spend with you, basically. So planning beforehand is something that's a must for attending a conference and getting the best ROI. Then again, having your materials ready, like carry a iPad, carry a tab, carry some brochures, your visiting cards. So these are small things as such, but they matter a lot. So getting those things in place much before you attend the conference is a must. Having a very planned out and detailed planned out day for yourself for the conference is again a must, basically. So these two things, if you have a meetings and everything's planned out, you have all the stuff that you have to showcase, those things. And then after attending the conference, the another thing, which is a follow-up. Follow-up is a very important thing. I go to a conference, I attend, I meet maybe 50 or 60 people. I'm not going to remember each and every one of them, what I talked to them, what was the stuff and everything. So follow-up, taking down notes, there are multiple ways of taking notes, basically during the conferences as well, automated, written, hand notes, whatever suits you. But once you finish the conference, having a well-planned follow-up is very important. And that also has to be timed, basically, because most of the people who are returning from conferences, maybe for a week or so, everyone is busy. Now, if you are, again, sending them mails, calling them, they're not going to entertain you that much. So timing those things is, again, very important, basically.
Yeah, I think some great insights there. And I love what you said about it. It's in making sure you have a plan for the conference. That's not just the conference. It's pre-conference, during conference, post-conference, yes, for every single one of those. And if that becomes an SOP, you know, then you know that you are maximizing the ROI that you possibly can get. So when it comes to like a pre, doing the pre things, and I know people listening here, people watching go, well, that's what I do. But I'm going to challenge you and say, do you actually do it every single time? You know you should be doing it, but are you actually doing it every single time? You know, so you're not just, we all been to conferences and we see these people who are flown in from, you know, different countries, and they just seem to be aimlessly walking around and just acting with no real plan. You know, and that's not how it's going to stand out and improve your ROI. So making sure you're having meetings, getting that, like you say, getting the attendee list, who's actually going to be there, who can you set them up, but making sure that you're putting those meetings in place a lot sooner before everyone's calendar gets booked up in that meeting, you know, and making sure you do that. So when it comes to having meetings, everyone's busy, like you said, and again, it's a great point that the week after a conference, everybody's super busy, or you know, they're catching up from work, or they're trying to catch up with the people they spoke to. So the one-hit wonders don't work. And I've seen this so many times. Well, I tried to reach out afterwards and they never came back to me. They're not going to, because again, you're caught in the noise in that first week. It's how many follow-ups you do in week two, week three, week four, just to allow them to settle, the dust to settle, and then have a conversation. But when it comes to actual time in the conference itself, Terry, what are you ensuring you do in these meetings? Are you selling in these meetings? Are you just laying some seeds? Are you just building relationships? What is the core focus for these meetings, so, the way you do it?
Yeah, so there are two things that we basically do. One is building relationship. That's very important, because a lot of meetings that we set up, once we start talking, we see that maybe he's not the potential customer or potential person with whom we are going to work. But again, maybe he is not the one. But if you have if you build a good relationship with that particular person, maybe he can refer you to someone else. So building relationship is something which is very important. That's what I generally look at, because most of the conferences, it's not something wherein you go, you meet someone, and you're going to get a project out of it. So it's mainly building relationship. And the second part is showing to that particular person what exactly you do, why they should prefer you over other people. So basically showcasing, like you said, showcasing that you are an expert, you are an authority on that particular thing. So now the timing as such for those these meetings are very small. It can it cannot extend to maybe an hour or something. So these are generally small meetings, basically. So these two things are something that I mainly focus on: building a relationship, having a chit chat, knowing about that particular person, about what he has done, what they are looking at, basically what they are doing as such as a company, as an individual, and then showcasing your things, like what you are doing, what you are up to, how you can benefit that particular person. So these are the two things that we look at. It's not something wherein we are looking at direct selling or looking at wherein we can get a direct project out of that particular company or that particular person. So that comes maybe later once you start building relationship, following up and stuff.
Yeah, that's other. I think, again, we've all been in conferences where we've set up the meetings, we've sat there, and as soon as we got, they've just a quick introduction and they're into selling. You know, they don't even know if I'm the right person yet. I don't even know if I'm in the right place. But they're beginning to selling. And it becomes so annoying because you just think, I could be spending my time with someone and building a relationship, as you said. And now this person's taking up my time. And I get it. Their employer has said, get over to that conference.
That's right.
Build as many meetings as you can and start selling, and start selling straight away. And it doesn't work with these conferences. Conferences nowadays, like you said, I've got a client who's in CRM, and they really want to start making sure that the relationship in CRM is coming back to forth. You know, it is all about the relationships, because like you quite rightly said there, Tarek, if that person is not the right person for you and you start selling too quickly, they're not going to refer you to somebody else. Whereas if you start a relationship and it's not the right person, they are more likely to refer you to somebody who is going to be that right person. And like everything else, common sense isn't always common practice, and we know that. So let's talk about something else. Let's talk about what being in business now for a good number of years and your experience, Tarek, what is probably the number one mistake leaders in tech, founders in tech, you see are making when it comes to growing their business?
I think the first thing is looking at short-term benefits, because we get a lot of clients basically who have burned their hands at different vendors. Basically, they have spent money, they have burned their hands, and then they have come looking at us. At times, also we are we have talked to clients who don't want to work with someone in India. Why? Because they have burned they've burned their fingers with one or two vendors, so they. Basically they think each and everyone in this particular location or particular area would be giving the same sort of a service. So I think customer service is something which is very important, basically. And a lot of people don't look at it from the perspective, like even from sales or business development perspective, you will look at business developers who are basically looking at new businesses each and every month. Okay. Whereas if you look at, you have got a set of maybe 10 clients instead of 50, but they are someone with whom you're working long-term. We have got clients with whom we are working for around 5 or 6 years. So that is something that's very important to retain the customer. If you're not retaining the customer, you're just looking at short-term gains. That is not something that is going to help you grow. Okay, so that's one thing that we realized as a company very early, that, okay, we have to focus on less number of customers, but happy customers, basically. So that's something that's a lot of people are not doing in the service-based industry.
Yep, and I think especially in the service industry, like you said, if you're too busy servicing too many people, then customer service will decline. It's inevitable, right? Because you just don't have the time to look after these people, which then has a knock-on effect, et cetera, et cetera. But what a lot of people do not realize, like you and I do, Tarek, is that if you only working with a small amount, you can actually give great customer service, which means you can start increasing your fees. And when you start increasing your fees, again, you're looking like the authority in your field, because you're not in that pool of I'll take anything, what we call the bucket shop mentality, right? Whereas, I can do anything and everything for everyone. And if you do that, then you're just not really serving anybody at all, and you can't build a name for yourself, and you can't scale. So that's a really, really important part there.
I would like to add one more thing. Like I mentioned, like having setting up the niche, basically. Being in the service industry or in the IT industry, there are a lot of things that you can do. And a lot of industry, a lot of domains that you can work on. So if you don't set up your niche early on, basically, so that is, again, going to not going to work, basically, for you, for sure.
So let's talk about a niche. You know, very quickly, let's talk about that. niches aren't something you can, well, certainly my experience and from others, you can't just choose one and it'll be forevermore. We have to go through so many iterations of what our niche is, who our niche is, you know, what is the problem we serve. How did you go about finding and nailing your niche?
Okay. So basically, once we started, just like any other company, we were doing like whatever business comes, we are going to do it basically. So it was logical because we were starting up, we needed revenue. So anything and everything which comes, we went ahead and got it done initially. But slowly, like I had a very fortunate for having a very good team initially. So two of my initial team members, they're still working with me till date. So it has been 8 years and still we are going good. So they basically helped me understand, like, these are the particular areas, technology set and industries for which we have been working. So there are like maybe 20 clients that we have worked with. But out of those 20 clients, if you see these two, three clients we worked with and we delivered very good results, basically. The clients were much more happier as compared to other clients. The result that we gave was much more better, and we have much more understanding about the tech, that particular technology, about that particular domain. So why not focus on that technology and only those sort of clients, basically? So that was something that came in initially. When I say initially, it took around 1.5-2 years for us to understand that, basically. And then we started focusing on those clients and those technology sets, basically. So that helped us create the niche, basically, for ourselves.
And help us understand, how does that make you feel as a founder, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner? How does it make you feel when you eventually land in this niche and knowing that's it, that's really comfortable? How does that make you feel when you're doing that, when you find it?
It becomes like when you're providing a service to other people, it becomes very, very easy for you. Like being at someone who's working in the travel industry, and you know the in and out of the travel industry, be it any technology part of it, be it any business flow or anything. So it's such comforting when you're talking to a potential customer, basically. So they also understand, okay, this is someone, like you said, expert and authority. So it's something which, once you start working on that and you have understood, okay, this is something that I have to work on, you explore more things about it, you experiment with different things, and then you are able to understand, okay, this is the thing that most of the people would be requiring. These are their pain points, pain areas, and this is the solution that I have. So a lot of things, when you start working, you have ready-made solutions, basically. So that's where you basically increase your profit margin as well. You can give better solutions at lesser effort, basically. So it's really comforting, basically, and really much more profit-making thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the reason why I asked you that question was because, you know, sometimes we just don't think about the external benefits of niching down. We just think, oh, that's a market we can hit. But actually, it does make you far more profitable. It makes you far more relaxed. You grow as an authority rather than as an expert. You stand out. There are so many benefits to just having one focus and going far more down and drilling down deeper, because you're the only one that's doing that, or you'll be seen as the only one doing it. But you can talk naturally about it. Your team understands what it's all about, and you're not trying to be, like you say, a jack of all trades and trying to put out so many fires or spin so many plates, whichever analogy we would like to use, but just the focus and that clarity. And when you get clarity, you get confidence. And when the confidence comes, you become unstoppable. It's just one of those key focuses from that. So, Tarek, listen, I've got one last question for you, and this is kind of a loaded question. If you could go back and talk to young Tarek, and you had to give young Tarek one piece of advice about succeeding in tech, what would it be?
I think there were two advice, basically, I would give. But one that I have been mentioning a lot is identify your niche. That's one thing. And second thing is get a very good team right from day one. Because having good people, and when I say good team, by good team, I mean people who have got much more knowledge than what you have, basically. So that you can learn and grow. It's not just about having a person who is good in a particular thing, but someone from whom you can learn, basically. So that's very important. So these two things are very important for any business or any entrepreneur, basically.
I think that's a fantastic place to end this episode. Tarek, thank you very much for joining us and sharing your time. Your insights have been absolutely fantastic, and I'm sure invaluable for others. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Gary, for having me here. Thank you.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus podcast. And as normal, if you've taken some insights or liked some stuff that Tarek said, please make sure you like and comment the stuff that you like below so that other people can learn from it as well. But why not go a step further and share the episode like this so that other people that you know can all grow in their business as well. So until next time, thank you very much for joining us on this episode. Keep striving, keep pushing, keep being profitable, and we'll see you all on the next episode. Bye-bye.